Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Anti-government protests continue in Venezuela in the aftermath of the nation's July 28th sham presidential election. There is a call for a global protest against President Nicolas Maduro for this Saturday, August 17th. The once wealthy South American nation has become dismantled by an ongoing economic crisis that has sent millions of refugees to the United States. The question is, what is next for Venezuela? What is next for freedom and democracy there? We're now joined by Freddy Guevara. He is a Venezuelan politician. He was elected deputy to the Venezuelan National Assembly, and he is also now at a democracy visiting fellow at the Ash Institute at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And welcome to The Source, Freddy Guevara. It's good to have you.
Hello. Thank you very much for this invitation. And thanks for all the American people, and especially also the people from Texas, for the support they've been giving to Venezuelans.
So you have felt the wrath of the Maduro regime during your tenure, as you have fought for fair representation and democracy and freedom in Venezuela. What was your experience?
Well, I lost my freedom twice. Last time was in jail, 38 days in solitary confinement. It was in one of the worst political prisons that we have there. And previous to that, I was 3 years in the Chilean embassy. You know, like Julian Assange was in the Ecuadorian embassy. I had a kind of a refugee status in the Chilean embassy in Caracas. It was kind of a house arrest because I was leading the first protest in 2017 when I was vice president of the Congress. And then Maduro went after me. I got lucky and I was able to get out of my place before the police came in. And the ambassador of Chile took me in his place. And I spent there 3 years without being able to go out. Then they gave a fake pardon to a lot of politicians. I went outside of the embassy and they put me in jail. And I was lucky because I'm alive and, you know, I'm complete. But I have all my body parts, you know. But many of people from the struggle have died or have suffered tremendous torture. So that's what happens in Venezuela if you dare to face a dictatorship, the dictatorship that Maduro runs.
So that speaks to the bravery of the people who are taking to the streets in Venezuela now, demanding
absolutely
that they be allowed, that their voices be heard, that their votes be respected, and that Maduro will step down and respect the election. Outside observers say that he lost that election by about 2-1. That is, there's no disputing it. It was clear, absolute fraud, and that he is not an elected person. He's a dictator. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is not only how I see it. I will say two things. The first one is that we have the proof, and it's not just our parallel content. We also have that. We have our parallel content. We have the exit polls. We have the polls. We have all that. But what we have in our hands is the tallies. The tallies that the electoral board releases in every electoral booth that proves supports the results. We have more than 80% of those tallies. And the difference that we have there, that again, it's not the tallies that are for, you know, it's not the tallies that we made, it's the tallies that are for the official institution that oversees the electoral process in Venezuela. Those tallies said that with 80% of the vote, 80% of those tallies, we have, you know, the spread is so big. Now we are close to 65% or something like that. But the thing is that even if they have 100% of the votes in all of the other tallies, they will not win. I'm not talking about statistics. I'm talking about mathematically, it will be impossible. So that will be the first thing. The second thing is that, as you said, it's not only our claim. Now the Carter Center, that it was invited by the Maduro regime, it wasn't invited by us. They say the opposition won. The European Union, the American government, the Chilean government. The Chilean government, no one can say that, you know, the President Boric is a right-wing president. He's a very left president. Lula and in Brazil. So it's an international condemnation against what Maduro is doing. And there's no doubt. There's there's no 1% of doubt that Maduro is trying to steal the election, that they proclaim that he won without any support, and that our candidate, that it's Edmundo González, was the winner of this election.
The United States was reported by the Wall Street Journal is trying to offer amnesty to Maduro and some of his top lieutenants if they would leave the country. And then yesterday, the State Department denied that they actually did that. It does seem to be at least was some kind of gesture that they're making to try and negotiate some settlement with Maduro to try to prevent large-scale violence and to put Venezuela on a track back on prosperity and ending the horrible economic conditions that exist now. But the United States is in a difficult position because there's so much distrust from the United States by Venezuela, and Maduro likes to demonize what the U.S. is doing. So it does seem like the United States is working with Mexico, Colombia, and Brazil to negotiate something. What do you see happening? What would you like to see happening?
Well, first I will say that the role of the United States is fundamental to regain Venezuelan freedom. And I will say this not just based on wishes, but in a crude reality, is that the Venezuelan regime is also supported by China, by Iran, and by Russia. And the Venezuelan people, you know, can have a hard time, but still defeat a dictator. But what the Venezuelan people can't do by their own is to defeat a dictator as Maduro and at the same time fight the Chinese Communist Party, the Putin regime, the Ayatollah in Iran, and all of that. So I think that the role of the United States is fundamental because it's the first democratic superpower, and it has the right tools to exert also pressure, not only about Maduro, but also to cut the ties or the support, the outside support that the Venezuelan regime, receives from them. So even though that I am absolutely sure that this will be a fight, a struggle that needs to be, and it's been led by the Venezuelan people, even though there's a lot of danger in doing that. We need to keep having the bipartisan support of the United States to do this. Because, of course, as you said, and you're absolutely right, the Maduro regime narrative, it's like the Cuban narrative, you know, like, no, the United States is, you know, the big devil that is the big, everything that happens, electricity goes down and it's the fault of the United States. If Maduro's wife cheats on him, it's the wife of is the blame of the United States. Everything that happens is blame of the United States. So I think it's very smart to also pressure and use and work with partners like Mexico, Colombia, and Brazil that, are from the left and they can be the good guys. But also we need, the carrot and the stick as every negotiation strategy. And I think that the United States, of course, can offer a lot of incentives, some pardons or things like that, but also to put more pressure. And I think that this is a situation that needs to be addressed because I think that sometimes in the United States, the discussion about what to do about Venezuela can get entangled into American politics, make this a discussion between which policy was better, the Trump policy or the Biden policy. And the reality is that, that doesn't help anyone there. Maybe that can help some side get votes, but the only thing that will help Venezuelans is to have a bipartisan support, a national support of all the American institutions to not only defend us and help us, but also to defend and protect you and your borders. In terms of course, the crazy migration crisis that we have, it's almost 8 million of Venezuelans have left the country, and we're a country of 30 million people. So it's almost like more than 20% of the population that have left the country. And that will increase if the situation is not resolved. And on the other hand, the ties that the Maduro regime has with countries that are basically enemies of the democracies, like, as I said, Iran and Russia, that have a very important interest in sustaining the Maduro regime in order to spread their ideologies and their interests around the region. So I think that the role is not only my opinion, it's the opinion of all the democratic forces, is the opinion of the leader of the opposition, that is Maria Corina Machado, and our president-elected, Edmundo González. We absolutely believe that the role of the United States will be fundamental to have a good outcome for this struggle, in this struggle.
Yesterday, Donald Trump, you mentioned Trump, he was having an interview with Elon Musk on his platform X, and Trump said if he loses the election that he will go to Venezuela. Did you hear that? What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I heard that. I mean, I think that he was being ironic, right? I think that he was making this comment that Caracas is safer now than the United States. And I think he was being ironic with that because, of course, it's not just Trump. It's just every American that goes to Venezuela will most likely face a very bad fate, a very bad destination, right? I mean, we are a country that is run by a dictatorship, and many Americans have been used as just tokens for exchange, like guerrillas does. Many Americans have been used as token for negotiation. So I think that he was just being ironic, right? And but because no one in their right said, you know, we have an expression in Spanish, but it's like with two fingers on their forehead, will say that they will go to Venezuela now, because of course there's an absolutely madman.
Right, but it's interesting that he chose Venezuela. That would be his country of exile, when we're now hoping that Nicolas Maduro is picking out his country of exile. We'll see what that is. Okay, we're gonna take a 1 minute break here. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. When we come back, I want to talk to you more about the refugees who have fled Venezuela and what can we do about a global protest this Saturday in support of democracy in Venezuela. And if there is a regime change, what would that look like in order to support and rebuild Venezuela? The number again, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. The source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Venezuela, getting an update on the turmoil in the country as the people have taken to the streets demanding that their votes be respected after a controversial, basically a sham presidential election in July 28th. The socialist regime led by Nicolas Maduro is denying the vote, and he is angling for an inauguration in January. There is a protest, a global protest. People around the world will be protesting in support of democracy in Venezuela and freedom there. We're joined by Freddy Guevara. He is a Venezuelan politician. He was elected deputy of the Venezuelan National Assembly there. He was an opponent to the dictatorship there, and he was imprisoned for that. He is now a democracy visiting fellow at the Ash Institute at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. And let's go to a caller. We have Jose on the line, and Jose, you're on the air.
Hi. I take offense for the gaslighting that's going on, calling it a sham election, when even the Venezuelan government has not released its data yet, as far as I understand it. The second thing is that the Carter Center that oversees these elections, that's being run by Blinken and the State Department, and they have a hostile attitude towards the Venezuelan government. How many times has the National Endowment for Democracy tried to overthrow the Venezuelan government, from Maduro to Chavez? And how many times has the National Endowment for Democracy been behind those protests every election cycle? All right. The other thing I'd like to ask Freddie is, who's funding him? Who's giving him money from the U.S.? Are you being backed by the National Endowment for Democracy?
All right, Jose, thank you for the call, and I hope you're doing well. So can we talk about that, Freddie?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I work, as you said, I work out at a Harvard University. And I do also some consulting jobs, and I don't have, any shame in saying that. And I would say something that is very important. I mean, I understand what Jose is saying. And I think that, I mean, I am going to assume that Jose is an American or any human being that has a genuine concerned about American policy towards, maybe left governments, right? I would assume that. And I'm saying that because I could also assume that Jose is part of these organizations that has been founded by the Maduro regime or other regimes that are just, whose only purpose is to create chaos and support their policies within the United States. So I'm going to divide that. I'm going to separate those two audiences, because the last one is not, there's nothing to discuss there, right? If someone is willing to receive money from a dictatorship that has been accused of crimes against humanity, right, by the International Criminal Court, and not only, and by the fact-finding mission of the United Nations that was led by Michelle Bachelet from the left. So no one can say that Michelle Bachelet was founded by the National Endowment for Democracy, right? She was tortured by the right-wing dictatorship of Pinochet, so etc. So if someone who is willing to receive money from those type of people, make these statements, there's nothing to debate with that. That's just, you know, propaganda and a job. But I can understand, because I know some people that might be confused about the Venezuelan situation and see or try to understand their situation through the American lenses. And I think that's a very important point of view to dismantle, because I mean, every country has their reality. And I understand that everyone sees their reality through their own lenses. I think that some Venezuelans also make the same mistakes when they evaluate the situation in the United States. And we ask for you to not do the same. You know, in Venezuela, the situation is not about left or right. It's not about imperialism or anti-imperialism. It's not about Trump or Biden. It's not about black versus white. In Venezuela, the situation is very, very, very simple. People wanting to vote free, and a government who doesn't want to follow the rule of the people. And actually, Jose said something true at the beginning. He said something that's absolutely true. The regime, Maduro regime, they haven't shown any of their data. And still, they proclaim that Maduro won. Our law, the national law, says that 48 hours after the election, they need to publicly show the data. And they didn't do it. So the big question is, why, if we, the opposition, have the 80% of the tallies and we made it public, why, if the Carter Center, but not only the Carter Center, also the United Nations, why, if governments from the left like Colombia, Mexico, and Brazil are also contesting and saying that Maduro needs to show the data, and that until he shows the proof that they are not going to have, because they cannot fabricate it, at least not until, not without being, being caught in the act of making a fraud, why some people will believe that Maduro won? So that was a point that Jose, he was right with that. And I'm taking his word to actually say to him, Jose, if you really believe in democracy, push for the Maduro regime to release the data from an independent audit of that data, and question yourself why they proclaim Maduro the winner, if they are not willing to show any support of that.
Right. The word sham, that's my word. I put that in there. Because I don't think, typically journalism, they're using the word disputed election. I don't think that's strong enough. And so I used all the reasoning that you just said there, Freddie, why I consider it to be a complete and utter sham. And I even think that word is not strong enough. Let's go to
I agree. Absolutely agree.
It's a joke. Let's go to Daniel. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air, Daniel. Go ahead.
Good. Very obvious, succinct as I can be. Number one, I agree with you on the word sham. Number two, the caller that called in questioning this as if it's a terrible thing. We just have to remember, we're having issues with democracy in this country where Trump, a Hitler wannabe, is offending me. My father was a World War II hero. And for all the veterans that sacrificed for this country and their families, it is offensive to suggest that we're calling this anything more than what it is. It's a sham. It's a disgrace. We need to defend democracy throughout the world before we don't have it here. And so much that Trump has done to denigrate and insult the veterans I can go on and on, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Daniel. Appreciate your call. So look, I'm going to talk about this in the United States. Best interest. What is the best interest of our nation is to have a stabilized and prosperous Venezuela. And we should do everything we can within the confines of democracy and international law to try and make that happen. So, Freddie, reaction to that?
Absolutely, sure. I mean, it's, of course, I'm a Venezuelan. I want to be able to go back to my country to see my family and to see, you know, and to make my girlfriend to know the place where I was born and all of that. But, and of course, I have people in friends in jail, and I have my own personal interest to ask for United States support. But the truth of the matter is what you're saying. It's also in United States' interest to do everything you can, and I say you not as a person, but as a country itself, with all the sites, with all the institutions, with all the organizations, with all of the media, to help Venezuelans achieve their freedom. Because the consequence is absolutely clear. And I am not a wizard. I'm not a person that is foreseeing the future. It's just what happened. And it's just what will happen because we saw what happened some years ago. If Maduro remains sustained power by force, people will flee the country by millions. And those people are not going to stay in Latin America because Latin America is a development region who doesn't have enough economic sustainability or land to, you know, receive.
Right. They will end up on our southern border. Well, let me ask you really quickly, though, and then I want to get to a caller. Real quick question. If the Venezuela issue is resolved, if there is peace, it's stabilized, democracy, do you think people, I mean, it's a beautiful country, beautiful land. People want to go back to Venezuela. You think
Absolutely.
We'll see people go back there from the United States?
There's actually a poll that the American government made, and it would say that almost 40% of the Venezuelans that are now in the United States will say that they will go back. 40%. 40%. That's huge. That's not even relatable to a lot of other type of migrations like this one. So we're talking about like releasing, you know, easing that problem now. And that's a public information that you can search online.
Okay, I'm going to squeeze in Maribel. Maribel, thanks for calling in. You have about a minute. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you so much. I want to thank both of you for bringing light to this issue. And I also wanted to kind of go back to a previous caller's comments, just because I feel like there are a lot of feelings in the U.S. regarding election fairness and election transparency, not only just in the U.S., but abroad as well. So when we look at Venezuela, and I know you called it a sham election, and I completely agree with you. I think calling it a disputed election is way too lenient because when you look at the complaints that originated the Carter Center and the UN looking into this election, it's complaints made by citizens and it's complaints made by people who live in that in Venezuela saying, hey, I'm experiencing this firsthand. We're not having fair elections. We're not having transparency. And one of the biggest tells of a non-fair election and a sham election is the government not releasing their data. There's no reason that they shouldn't be releasing.
Okay, so Maribel, we are completely out of time, but I'm glad I got you on the air, and thank you for calling in. So, Freddie, really quickly, do you have hope? Is there going to be change?
Absolutely. I'm absolutely optimistic, of course. Nothing is certain in life. But I will bet everything that we're going to achieve freedom if everyone that is involved in this will do their part. And I will take this opportunity also to invite the Americans that are hearing this to attend to Austin. We have the protest this Saturday, right? So we have it in Austin, in Houston, and in San Antonio. In San Antonio, we'll be in 300 Alamo Plaza. In Houston, we'll be in 25600 Westheimer.
Okay, I'm totally out of time, so I got to cut you off. Freddie Guevara, a democracy fellow from Venezuela, thank you so much.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.